You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Before we even get started, let me confess. This week I have engaged in one of those dubious practices of unscrupulous preachers that I'm usually calling out as dishonest. It's called proof texting. Now, proof texting means using out-of-context quotes from the Bible to make a point that doesn't accurately reflect the original intent of the author. So, in an effort to explain myself and seek absolution, let me put our Ezra quote in context and then see if my using it is worth having sullied myself. Our Ezra quote today sounds very encouraging and inspirational. Rise up. This matter is in your hands. We will support you, so take courage and do it. Until you consider its unflattering context. It's a quote spoken by Shechaniah, a citizen of Jerusalem, who says it to Ezra in the book Ezra. Following the Jews' return from exile in Babylon, the Jews rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. But folks are still misbehaving. Ezra is distraught. He's convinced that the people's continued failure to follow God's laws will lead to more punishment from a vengeful God. The particular wrongdoing in question is that, evidently, a number of Jewish men have married non-Jewish foreign wives. Whoa! This was a direct assault on then common Jewish sensibilities about God's desire for racial purity. So Ezra orders the foreign wives and their children to be sent away, or else. After objecting initially, Shechaniah says, okay, I'll help you convince the Jewish men to send their foreign wives and children away. And that's where our passage comes in today. Shechaniah says to Ezra, we may not like it, but we'll support your decision to try and avoid troubling God's delicate ego. So, as I said, our quote today sounds very encouraging and inspirational. Rise up. This matter is in your hands. We will support you. So take courage and do it. Until you know that it's about racial discrimination and the race-based deportation of women and children to an uncertain future and possible death. See what I mean? So, once the context is known, this quote may very well be unsalvageable. Or we can try and redeem it for being a sentiment of support and encouragement. We'll see.
Our words of wisdom are from Ezra, chapter 10, verse 4, and Julian's Revelations of Divine Love. From Ezra, rise up. This matter is in your hands. We will support you, so take courage and do it.
From Revelations of Divine Love, charged with the quality of reverence and loving awe, we turn ourselves with all our might toward the actions to which we are guided. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
After John Good Trouble Lewis passed away last year, a farewell letter he'd written to young people was published as an op-ed in the New York Times. He shared a brief reminder of his life, its struggles and defeats, its victories and challenges, and how as a teenager he had met both Rosa Parks and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Those encounters called him to a life of passion for justice, which sent him to jail 40 times and almost got him killed on a couple of occasions. Then it called him to work in Congress for 33 years, where he championed legislation that promoted justice. As part of his farewell letter, Lewis encouraged young people to study and learn the lessons of history. Truth does not change. I think the wisdom of that advice has been borne out the last few months as we've studied the teachings of Julian of Norwich. Learning the lessons we have from Julian, the unchanging truths that Julian revealed 600 years ago, have offered a lot of us some genuine aha moments. In fact, the most frequent comments I've received from most of you have been variations on, where has this woman been all my life, and why have her teachings been ignored? I think most of you would agree that the fact that Julian's book was essentially ignored or intentionally suppressed for centuries does not diminish its importance. To the contrary, it begs the question, why? Why has she been sidelined for centuries? In part, her views were seen as suspicious simply because she was a woman. And what was worse, she was a deeply aware and confident woman who proclaimed a vision of spirituality that stood in stark contrast to the religious and political status quo of her day. She not only found her own voice, but clearly articulated that voice in writings that led her to become the first woman to write a book in English. In a patriarchal system that devalued women, she celebrated womanhood, mothering, and the divine feminine. In a world that blamed nature for the pandemic, she praised the goodness of nature. One of her main themes, non-dualism, flew in the face of the either-or status quo of good, evil, black, white, masculine, feminine, us, them, human, divine. In a world that saw the divine as distant and sealed off from the grubby filthiness of humanity, she invented the word oneing to convey the oneness of God and us, of God and nature. And where most, even to this day, associate our sensuality with evil, Julian invented the word enjoy to embrace the goodness of sensuality in the human experience. In short, the world was just not ready for her. The medieval world was too engrossed with the cutthroat competitive projects of empire building and discovery, destroying indigenous civilizations and claiming as much territory as possible. We were preoccupied with creating the kind of economic systems that extracted whatever goods were best for us for the short term without taking into consideration any long-term consequences. Our institutions were too busy shoring up misogyny for Julian's vision of feminism to be taken as anything but a threat. Our guide to Julian, Matthew Fox, wonders, how would history, both religious and cultural, have been changed if Julian's ideas had been taken to heart centuries ago? Would those indoctrinated by Julian's teachings have tolerated the wiping out of indigenous cultures? Would disciples of Julian looked the other way as slavery became an accepted part of doing business? Would followers of Julian stand by while children were exploited in the labor force? Would those convinced that God and nature are one have taken climate change more seriously than we have up to this point? Maybe we just hadn't matured enough as a species to hear from Julian and the other creation mystics. Maybe we still haven't. We have yet to get over our narcissism as a species. Maybe our chosen paths of domination and destruction, of power over everyone and everything, of patriarchy, of rugged individualism and survival of the fittest are just too ingrained in us. A lot of things Julian outright rejected are still at the heart of many people's understanding of Christianity. She threw out the church's idea of a vengeful and wrathful God. She saw no such thing and insisted that it was humans who were the vengeful and wrathful ones and were busy projecting onto divinity our own unexamined shadows, anger, and bitterness. Julian explicitly rejects the punitive patriarchy and fundamentalism that many 21st century Christians are desperately holding on to. As we continue to wrestle with the consequences of climate change, which very likely contributed to the germination of COVID-19, as anti-vaxxers continue to deny science and more than a few fundamentalist Christians think belief in Jesus will protect them from the virus, human beings are essentially operating out of our primal reptilian brain and the stubbornness that it's famous for. But maybe, just maybe, there are some of us today who are ready to see ourselves in the broader context of all of creation, to listen to science and, like Julian, embrace our oneness with the cosmos. Maybe, just maybe, we're living in a time where Julian can re-enter the picture. Perhaps it's time that we embrace the rich tradition of creation spirituality that Julian, along with Jesus and Benedict and Hildegard and Francis and Aquinas and Mechtild and Eckhart represent. Perhaps Julian is the next vaccine we really need. Look, I, for one, am sick and tired of hearing people whine about returning to normal after the coronavirus, if it ever does go away. Remember, the so-called normal people are referring to was far from healthy for our bodies or our cultures or our species or for the climate. Before the pandemic, racism and sexism were normal. Our economy favoring the ultra-rich and condemning the poor to generations of oppression was normal. Our educational system, religion, politics, and media having us at one another's throats was normal. I don't want to go back to that. Matthew Fox writes, "A pandemic is too important to waste. This pandemic is here to wake us up. To what? To a new normal, one that honors the sacredness of the earth and all of its life forms, one that honors the divine feminine alongside a sacred masculine, one that honors the human body and its basic needs along with the needs of the earth's body, and on that basis gives birth to a new body politic. One that does not put billionaires and the structures that create them on pedestals. One that does not elect narcissistic politicians who incarnate the very meaning of fatalistic self-hatred by watching hundreds of thousands die with a shrug of the shoulders. It is what it is." Bottom line, we need to reinvent our culture. We need to aim for a new normal. And it won't be easy. Olympic athlete Kristen Armstrong, the most decorated U.S. woman cyclist of all time, says, "Times of transition are strenuous, but I love them. They're an opportunity to purge, rethink priorities, and be intentional about new habits. We can make our new normal any way we want." But we're up against people like Shechaniah and Ezra, who were always ready to throw their weight behind things that are regressive, discriminatory, and mean-spirited. "Yes, we will support harming others, so long as it guarantees my comfortable life will be uninterrupted." The question is, are we ready to purge, rethink priorities, and with Julian, be intentional about a new normal? Charged with the quality of reverence and loving awe, we turn ourselves with all our might toward the actions to which we are guided. And what are those actions? No biggies. Just the deconstruction of patriarchy, the condemnation of a punitive father god, and an embrace of a compassionate mother god. Instead of the dualism of body versus soul, masculine versus feminine, human versus nature, and us versus them, Julian proclaims unity. Instead of fear, trust. Instead of leading with the primitive reptilian brain, she prioritizes the cooperative functions of the frontal lobe. Instead of plundering Mother Earth, she honors the divine nature in the web of creation. Instead of human egoism and narcissism, she issues a new invitation to celebrate and to share. And instead of self-pity and ego-driven self-aggrandizement, she models a healthy self-love that leads towards service to others. This is a huge paradigm shift for religion, from the shaming ideology of original sin to the embrace of original goodness and original blessing. It means abandoning what theologian Christer Stendahl calls that most neurotic question not found in the Bible. Am I saved? To questions of gratitude and grace. How do we give thanks and give back? As we've studied Julian over the last couple of months, it's become clear to me that she's not only a formidable ancestor in the faith and a virtual untapped fount of wisdom, she is a prophet for the 21st century. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel teaches that a prophet's primary task is to interfere. Julian is calling us to interfere with patriarchy, to interfere with the status quo of dualism, to interfere with the kinds of destructive behavior human arrogance unleashes on creation. Julian is calling us to interfere with the controlling and harmful dogmas of the church. So, are you ready to interfere? May Julian give each of us the vision and the courage to interfere. And may the assurance that all will be well give us strength for the journey. For all will be well. All will be well. All manner of things will be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.wepuTLoveFirst.org.